Lynn Hatter, let's begin with you. The lots of measures getting lots of attention around the state. But let's begin with the most important thing. Lawmakers approved a $77.1 billion budget, and it was a really big flush budget. They spent a lot of money. They spread a lot of money around the state. What was the overall feel at the Capitol about how the budget was passed?
Well, the overall feel was a little bit of something for everyone. There wasn't a lot of people who would stand up and say that they didn't like this budget. Democrats got a lot of things that they wanted in there. Republicans got a lot of things that they wanted in there. So at $77 billion, it's actually, I do believe, the largest budget that we've had in our state. And that comes after we've had about $1 billion in surplus money that came in. So all in all, mostly everybody is happy, and that's now on its way to the governor. Now, given that there's so much stuff in that budget, it's going to be interesting to see what the governor decides to take out, if anything.
And he might do that. Tia Mitchell, lawmakers spent some money on social programs, and they approved some measures that even just a few years ago would have seen have been seen as absolutely out of the question. In-state tuition for undocumented immigrants, and they legalized a strain of marijuana known as Charlotte's Web to help kids with epilepsy. In your view, was there an intent in this election year, as the governor faces re-election, to tack a little bit more to the center on some of these issues that might perhaps appeal to a broader swath of the state's voters?
Most definitely. I mean, I think if you ask a member of the Republican Party what their leadership was thinking this session, they'd say, you know, we're listening to the people, we're responding to our constituents, and we're doing things that we think make sense. But the cynic will say these are election year ploys. For example, when you think about the Charlotte's Web, this one very specific type of non-euphoric marijuana. And I was talking to Representative Elaine Schwartz, which is a Democratic leader on healthcare policy, and she said, you know, I wonder if this is a way for Republicans to say we support medical marijuana, but also kind of decreasing the interest in the constitutional amendment that would actually have widespread medical marijuana. And she says, you know, I just wonder if they're playing politics with this particular subject.
And if you're just joining the program, the number to get on the line with us here at First Coast Connect is 549-2937. Give us a call right now. Let us know your thoughts about what lawmakers in Tallahassee did this session, whether it comes to medical marijuana, tuition for undocumented immigrants, failing to expand Medicaid in the state, or whatever's on your mind. Lynn Hatter, Democrats were disappointed that the legislature failed to take the $51 billion in federal funding that would have expanded Medicaid to low-income people in Florida. Do you see that coming up again at some point?
It's probably going to come up again. More than likely it will. I mean, we're getting ready to go into, we're actually in the middle of a gubernatorial election. And this session, I thought it was really interesting that you didn't really see the Democrats shouting too much about this. I mean, every so often they would get up and say, hey, you know, Representative so-and-so, your, you know, healthcare budget, there's no money for a Medicaid expansion. But they didn't do that, you know, a lot. And even on the last few days, you saw many of the groups coming to the legislature. But again, they didn't raise too much of a fuss. And so I think there's a lot of waiting to see what happens in November, which will determine, you know, which way they decide to go on this issue.
And
but again, the...
Go ahead. Sure, go ahead.
Well, what I was going to say is, again, in November, you know, it's really going to depend on which governor is in office.
Certainly.
Either Charlie Crist or Rick Scott.
Right. And, of course, you can look at their actions through the prism of that campaign. At the same time, though, Tia, there was money for hospitals to treat the uninsured, big increases in classroom spending, money for senior citizens and the disabled. Lots of money went to better enforcement of child welfare protection measures. Quite a bit of social safety net spending.
Yes, especially where it comes to the social welfare for protecting our children, the Cherish Periwinkle case really resonated in Tallahassee, as well as you know, other cases. The Miami Herald had a big investigation about child deaths of children who are already in the system, and that really resonated. So they did, that was one of the first things they did this session, was pass a series of laws that increase penalties for sexual offenders, require more supervision and registration for sexual predators. And then they've also, again, as you mentioned, did budget more money to have more caseworkers, more money for some of the services for families that are in need.
And Lynn Hatter, despite calls for tweaks or changes to the state's controversial Stand Your Ground law, not much moved there. That will stand pat for now, correct?
That will. And actually, several different gun measures failed. You know, the one that kind of collapsed at the last minute was what some people were calling the zombie apocalypse bill. That was the concealed carry during mandatory evacuations. That one collapsed in the final week as well. So several high-profile gun bills did not get through. And actually, there was a dust-up yesterday between the NRA's Marion Hammer and the Florida Sheriff's Association, which, you know, is really upset with Hammer over some comments that she made. And so a lot
what
of
were
those,
the, what were the comments? What were the comments?
Sure. Well, Marion Hammer said something of the like of she thought that the Florida Sheriff's Association was being anti-Second Amendment, and the Sheriff's Association President Grady Judd basically said, you know, that's totally not the case. You're way off base for that. So they had some exchange of words, but that just kind of really captures, you know, how powerful the NRA is in our state and, you know, some of the issues that crop up when the NRA is going head-to-head with the Sheriff's Association and law enforcement on some of these issues. And we saw this year that many of the bills that they wanted to get through didn't.
We'll go to your calls about the just-ended legislative session in just a moment at 549-2937. One more question for you, Tia Mitchell. On Sunday, your former employer, the Florida Times Union, ran an editorial expressing dismay and disappointment that lawmakers this session did virtually nothing to address climate change. Florida, of course, is seen as by far the most vulnerable of our 50 states when it comes to danger posed by warming oceans to our coastal areas. Was there any discussion about that?
Not a lot of discussion. Adam Putnam, who's the agricultural commissioner, who's also over energy issues, he, you know, got some cleanup language in. That was pretty much about it when it comes to energy policy. Even a bill failed that would have given companies tax breaks to install solar panels. That didn't get passed. So I think, you know, again, the cynic will say that money talks in Tallahassee and that, you know, environmental groups don't have a lot of money to spend, and so it's hard for them to perhaps get lawmakers' attention in ways that other industries can. I think that, unfortunately, in a state like Tallahassee that is run by conservatives, it takes kind of sometimes, you know, a wide-ranging newspaper investigation or a case that no one can deny sometimes to get these issues talked about and bring them to the forefront, such as the child welfare issues. So we'll see what it takes. But this was my third session with the Times-Herald, and energy and the environment has never been a big issue here.
And lots of calls, meanwhile, whether it comes to medical marijuana, in-state tuition for undocumented immigrants, whatever's on your mind, we want your calls and your questions right now about the biggest measures to come out of the state capitol at the conclusion of the annual legislative session. 549-2937 to join the program. Let's begin with Chip in St. Augustine. Hey, Chip, thanks for holding. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Melissa. Would like to comment on the medical marijuana thing. That's all well and good, and it's great to see that they're trying to make some progress on the medical portion of it. But what really needs to happen is there needs to be a public education campaign, and a lot of it directed at our elected officials, like especially Pam Bondi. She's acting and espousing things that have been proven wrong, and she evidently refuses to educate herself.
What do you mean by that? What in particular?
She attributes all of the old fear-mongering things that they've been said about marijuana all along. It makes you lazy. Well, we're all the lazy people. 50 million people in this country smoke marijuana. Where are all those people? Why aren't they just all laying around the streets? There needs to be a public education campaign because the first law ever made about marijuana was that you must grow hemp. And it was a colonist, George Washington, passed the law. And for years, and all the world over, it's still a cash crop. For years,
right.
It was one of our main cash crops.
Okay. All right. And that's Chip in St. Augustine. Thanks for the call, Chip. And I'm sure lots of other folks waiting on hold want to discuss medical marijuana. It's a hot topic. Lynn Hatter, this measure is very narrow. It approves a certain strain of medical marijuana and only to treat epileptic children. All of this being done in the Capitol in advance of this November, when voters will decide the fate of Amendment 2. That's the ballot measure, the ballot amendment that would legalize medical marijuana for a whole range of uses around the state. Polling shows that the vast majority of Florida voters say they're in favor of that. Was this more narrow piece of legislation designed to perhaps get out in front of this? Because public perception seems to be shifting very rapidly on this issue.
Yeah, and I think you'll find a lot of people who share that thought that this was, you know, an attempt by the legislature to try and, as Tia mentioned earlier, take away some of the intention from Amendment 2, which is going to be before voters in November. You know, the language that is in the Charlotte's Web bill, as it's called, which is this kind of non-euphoric strain that is designed for people with epilepsy, is far smaller. You know, it requires people to have to register with the state. It wouldn't exempt people from, you know, if a drug test comes up, you know, they would still have to take it. It would still kind of show up. It wouldn't exempt them at all. And so, you know, this is a really kind of sensitive area where the legislature is just now kind of dipping its toes, you know, into it. And so, you know, what's going to happen, we really don't know. All of the details are still being worked out. It's set up kind of a regulatory structure to kind of try and oversee this. It's placed, you know, additional requirements on farmers who could possibly grow it to make it happen. So this one is still kind of a work in progress, and there's definitely nothing in place right now at this moment to get it moving. But all of these things are going to be developed as we get closer and closer to the end of the year.
Sure. 549-2937 to join us. Michael in Orange Park is on the line. Michael, good morning.
Good morning. I'm commenting on the undocumented workers going to get in-state tuition fees.
Uh-huh.
I think it's totally preposterous. They're illegal. They shouldn't even be trying to go to school. And I'm not sure if it's legal for them to go to school here in the state of Florida.
Well, actually, I think, Michael, it refers only to the children of undocumented immigrants.
Yeah, but they're still undocumented.
Mm-hmm.
Can I?
Yeah, sure. No, and Michael, I appreciate the call. Michael, that's Michael in Orange Park. Let's go to Tia Mitchell. Tia, this measure got a lot of attention. Michael speaks for quite a few voters around the state who didn't approve of this. They don't think it's right. Can you share a little bit about what went into this bill and why lawmakers felt that it was an imperative to pass it?
Yes. So, first of all, it is undocumented immigrants. The argument made by proponents is that a lot of children, they already can go to the public schools, but when they went to college, they were not eligible for in-state tuition. Many of these are children who were brought over by their parents without the right paperwork. So, yes, the children are illegal immigrants as well, undocumented immigrants, as we like to call them as well. But the argument is they spent their lives in Florida. Florida is their home. They did not choose to come to Florida. They were brought here by their parents. They did not choose to be undocumented. And so that is why there was a push. This push has been going on for a couple of years, but they finally got the traction this year. there were requirements put on the legislation. So to qualify for in-state tuition, you know, they have to follow some procedures. They have to make sure that they do everything the state says that they have to do. But it is undocumented immigrants, and it is, I mean, it's a philosophical shift. Many of the conservatives in the House voted no on the measure, but it passed because the Hispanic caucus and moderate House Republicans joined with the Democrats and were able to form a majority.
Interesting. And Lynn, of course, in 2016, the state's growing Hispanic population is expected to play a major role at the polls. Were lawmakers looking ahead to that?
Oh, very much so. You know, in addition to this bill, you also had another piece of legislation that would allow a man named Jose Godinez Sampedio to become a lawyer. And he himself is, you know, an undocumented immigrant who went to Florida State University's law school, graduated, and was denied admission to the bar based upon his status. And that was actually another piece of legislation that also passed the legislature so that he could now become a lawyer. I wanted to add something to this in-state tuition issue. You know, the bill that passed was not the same exact bill that the legislature started off with. And so these students are going to have to apply for in-state tuition. It's not guaranteed for them. They're going to have to apply to get what are essentially out-of-state fee waivers. And so what's going to happen is you already have a lot of students who are from other states going to school in Florida who pay the out-of-state tuition rate. Now you're going to add more students into, you know, the list of people trying to apply for in-state tuition waivers. So while it gives them a way to access in-state tuition, it's not guaranteed that all of the students who will apply for it will actually get it.
But let me ask you both, as the caller just expressed, he's very angry about this. Just a few two short years ago, GOP presidential candidate Rick Perry got absolutely killed when during a debate, I think it was here in Florida, he said that he was for this type of measure in his home state of Texas, that that if you weren't for it, you had no heart. And he was heavily criticized for that. In just two short years, we have seen this massive shift in the terrain among Republicans, as you said, more moderate Republicans anyway, in the legislature.
Here's the thing. Number one, like you said, just times are changing. Number two, the Republican Party has made it clear that they don't like that they're losing the Hispanic vote to Democrats. And so there is a very concerted effort to bring Hispanics back into the fold. And then number three, when you think about the real application in Florida, I think the Republicans know that when it comes to the polls on Election Day, more than likely it's going to be a choice between Charlie Crist and Rick Scott. And so they're not necessarily worried about their base because they're doubtful that a hardcore conservative is going to vote for Charlie Crist. They're worried about the independents who can swing an election. And so a lot of the policies that, you know, the whole thought about Session setting up Rick Scott for his reelection, because these types of measures, this type of legislation is what can cause an independent to say, you know what, maybe those Republicans aren't bad. Maybe I can vote for Rick Scott this fall.
And if you're just joining us, we're speaking with Capitol reporters Tia Mitchell of the Tampa Bay Times and Miami Herald and Florida Public Radio's Lynn Hatter about all of the hot-button issues and laws, likely laws, to come out of the recent legislative session. Lots of calls on medical marijuana, in-state tuition for undocumented immigrants, and more here on First Coast Connect. Let's go to Paul in Orange Park now. Hey, Paul. Thanks for holding. You're on the air, Paul.
Good morning, Melissa. I love to listen to your show every day.
Thanks.
Just a brief note on the medical marijuana. It's a nice end run by the legislature, obviously encouraged by Governor Scott. But what they're doing is they're narrowing the medical use down to one specific thing, epilepsy, for which there's already medicine available. That would be like we invented penicillin now and said you could only treat throat infections. I'll give you another example. Viagra was originally designed for heart disease, and only later was it, you know, discovered to have other benefits. Marijuana, as it comes off the plant, has more than a dozen different chemicals called cannabinoids that you can use to treat depression, nausea in cancer patients receiving radiation and chemo, hyperactivity disorder, bipolar disorder, and just a whole spectrum of things. And that's what the 88% of the people in Florida are in favor of, not this little, you know, teeny slice of one chemical and used for only one specific medical condition. So I think we should press forward for legalization of the entire medical value of marijuana.
And that's Paul down in Orange Park. Thank you for the call, Paul. Lynn Hatter, if Amendment 2 does pass this fall, how will lawmakers grapple with the rash of dispensaries that are sure to crop up? We're already hearing about people working to establish these types of businesses in anticipation of Amendment 2 passing and marijuana being legalized for a widespread array of medical uses here in Florida. Lawmakers will then have to deal with all the legal and regulatory aspects of that.
They will. And, you know, this is something that, you know, how will the legislature deal with this? Because Amendment 2 pretty much outlines a semi-infrastructure already. You know, it gives doctors the ability to prescribe. It doesn't tell them what they can prescribe it for. These were some of the arguments that were made by State Attorney General Pam Bondi when she actually contested it before the Florida Supreme Court. You know, the legislature, the people will vote on the amendment, and it will be up to the legislature to kind of set up a process for it. And if they go too far, what could happen is if they try to make it more restrictive, then they could get sued. And so it's going to be a very delicate line that they're going to have to walk if this amendment passes in November to kind of set up a way to enforce the amendment without restricting it, which is probably going to give a lot of people in the legislature some heartburn.
Hmm. And Tia Mitchell, anything else we didn't touch on that was important that came out of the 60-day session?
Wow, I mean, so much.
So much.
So much, yet so little. I will say that there were a lot. One thing that I found interesting is there was very little done in healthcare this year. You know, the legislature made it clear that they were not going to really touch Medicaid expansion much this year. But very early in the session, House Republicans said, we've got some other ideas. We want to help nurse practitioners be able to do more to help, you know, patients have more care. We want to increase telemedicine, which is like virtual doctor visits, to again help consumers get better care. You know, they had all these ideas and none of it got done.
Interesting. Well, it's always fascinating to speak with you both. We appreciate your insights. Thanks for spending some time on the phone with us from the state capitol.
You're very
welcome.
Thank you
for having us.